Now, the rest of the story. Of course, you've heard the real-life legend of the female jazz singer Billie Holiday. Her story is emblazoned across the pages of the history of American music. I don't want you to confuse her with this other American jazz artist I'm about to name. A woman named Billie Tipton. Billie Tipton. This story might have been lost forever had she herself not eventually revealed the rest of the story. Now, a woman could sing with a jazz band in Billie Tipton's era, but female musicians, they were very few and far between. Lady band leaders were virtually unheard of. Nonetheless, Billie Tipton plugged away, played piano and sax with any band that would hire her. After a while, some good gigs came along with the bands of Jack Teagarden and Scott Cameron and Russ Carlyle. Musicians who performed with Billie in the late 40s recognized something special, an extraordinary talent on the verge of emerging from the rank and file. She just had too much going for her. Russ Carlyle said that. He said that for Billie Tipton, fame was only a matter of time. Well, Billie's time came in 1954 with the debut of the Billie Tipton Trio. And the group was big from then on. They played in nightclubs coast to coast, New York, Vegas, Reno, Los Angeles. Billie Tipton and her two male partners, Dick O'Neill and Ron Kildee, were more than lounge music. They were an act. Performances included slapstick routines and costumed camp. Gifted, good-natured Billie Tipton quickly won the affection of audiences and the respective associates. She arranged the music, played the piano, sang, sometimes soloed on soprano sax. Her leadership role in the music business made her unique in those days. And Billie Tipton was outstanding in something else. She composed much of the music that her trio performed. Billie's Pascal Blues, for example, was one of the great tunes that contemporaries were heralding. Her oldest friend in the music business was Dave Sobel. He had discovered the Billie Tipton Trio in a hotel lounge in Spokane, Washington. Dave had just been relaxing there, but when the music started, his ears caught fire. Never had Sobel heard a talent like Tipton's, nor had he known a performer who could project her personality as Billie could. So he signed the group, and he represented them until Tipton's retirement in 1973. Billie even helped run Dave's agency after bursitis and arthritis precluded performing. And then in February of this year, Billie Tipton died. And to this day, nobody knows for certain how old she was, nor practically anything else about her early youth. And yet Billie Tipton is going to be remembered in her recordings and in her songs, and for the professional territory she pioneered on behalf of women everywhere in a world reluctantly relinquished by men. For there was another part of Billie Tipton's act, something that left the stage with her when she went home each night, and something nobody knew. I mean nobody. Not the musicians who worked with her, not the audiences who admired her, not even the three adopted sons who loved her. For the most astonishing chapter in the autobiography of Billie Tipton is the one that was not revealed until after her death. Her secret formula for competing with men in those days when women didn't have a chance. Her formula for competing with men was to become one. It was the funeral director who discovered it. It was he who unavoidably observed that Billie Tipton was a she. And until then, there wasn't a soul on earth who realized the rest of the story.